Hey everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Soapbox Podcast from Risky.biz. We do about 10 of these every year. The idea is a vendor pays to come on to the show and talk to me for half an hour or so about what they're doing, why they're doing it, and how they see the security landscape generally. And this Soapbox edition is brought to you by Iceberg, which is spelled I-C-E-B-R-G. Iceberg is in the business of network-based response and detection. In simple terms, they drop a box on your network that strips network metadata and shunts it up to their cloud for analysis. And this allows incident responders in particular to really, really speed up their investigations. We know that a lot of internet traffic is encrypted these days and, you know, network traffic generally, and that's made some people take their eye off the network ball. So everyone's been focusing very heavily on endpoint detection and response, and that's where a lot of the investment in the industry has gone. Our guest this week, Iceberg's VP of Strategic Partnerships, Jason Rebholz, thinks we've wound up with a bit of a blind spot as a result. Now, it's true that a lot of network security tech fell behind the times, you can't deny it, but there are some fresh approaches emerging these days that are pretty bloody useful. Now, Iceberg started off as a product designed to accelerate incident response. I mean, you know, one thing you can do with this is just deploy it in 15 minutes when you're starting an IR job, and it gives you amazing visibility considering the time invested. But they're kind of broadening it out a little bit these days. They're not turning it into a fully fledged IDS, but they're able to give clients some very, very high quality signaling. And I think this is what you get when you get a bunch of ex-govies and incident responders together and they develop a product. Their alerts are more along the lines of, you've been owned by this APT group, not so much, that's some strange ICMP traffic hitting your mail server. Maybe some router in Azerbaijan needs a reboot. Carry on. So the thinking is definitely fresh, and I'm increasingly seeing companies play in the network security space again. Network detection is dead. Long live network detection. Jason Rebholz joined me to talk about Iceberg, incident response, and network visibility. Here he is.
Network is definitely not dead. I would say that if we look back over time, there's been a few different cycles with where people are focusing on technology. It really started off with network. When we're thinking about things like IDS, that's really where security came into its prime, where people were paying attention to things and really getting a lot of headway. And then over time, it started shifting. We saw an increase in logging. This is where SIMs came into play. And suddenly, we had EDR technology. And this is something that's really still in its prime. Now, the unfortunate part of this is that we're very single focused in our technologies, where we're going to go all in on one type of technology, deploy that all over our environment, and we really forget about these other technologies that are going to be providing that additional visibility that organizations need. So when I think about visibility in an organization, it comes down to a mix of endpoint, network, and logging. And if I had to put my money on two, it's going to be endpoint and network. And the reason for that is because that's going to provide you a lot of visibility into not only how to detect attackers that are trying to break into your environment or move around your environment, but more importantly, to investigate those. And you can balance them very, very nicely between each other, and they play off of each other, because I can be looking at something on the network side and really pick out what endpoints that I'm seeing suspicious activity on, go to those endpoints, do some investigation on those, find some additional indicators of compromise, and pop those back into the network side, and you have a nice little investigative cycle.
Yeah, I mean, it's the needles in haystacks thing, right? And when you're dealing with, we're in the sort of, big data age. But, you know, when you start crunching huge amounts of network data, you can, you know, sort of zoom in and zoom out pretty effectively. I just want to jump back for a second. Of course, you know, when we do these Soapbox specials, obviously there's a bit of discussion that happens before we hit the record button. Your background is in incident response, and I believe that you worked at Mandiant in what I call the glory days. And you've covered a lot of incidents, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, I've been doing incident response for just under a decade now, and I really started my career off at Mandiant, where had the opportunity to work a lot of really interesting cases, you know, anything from retailer breaches, some of the largest ones that hit the U.S. In the 2010 timeframes, And all the way up to advanced persistent threat, you know, China, everything that Mandiant really does a lot of. So the benefit there is that it gave me a lot of insights into large, complex environments and the challenges that many organizations face, from the largest of the organizations in the world down to some of the smallest organizations that are out there, where it's just a few practitioners.
Now, one thing you told me, which I think is interesting and oh so controversial, is that you think that contemporary incident responders, many of them, suck at understanding network stuff.
Well, it's not that they suck. It's just that they haven't invested the time into learning it, because honestly, there just hasn't been a lot of technologies in the last few years until now that are really coming out to aid incident responders in that capacity.
So it's like a blind spot that's, you know, evolved because they haven't had the right tools to you know, they haven't had usable tools, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just really comes down to, you know, if you don't use it, you'll lose it. Right. So people get focused on the EDR tech in, you know, the last 5 years or so. And that's really become the mainstay of research, of the focus on education. And there's nothing wrong with that. Right. You know, this isn't something where we need to go all in on one type of technology or forensic technique. But it's really about broadening that out so that you're getting a nice mix of investigative tool sets that you can go in and you get that full spectrum of what happened, from the endpoint side, where you're going to be able to look at a few different items that's not available on network side, and then vice versa on the network side, where you're getting that larger visibility into the environment as a whole that you're just not going to get by looking at a single system or even just a few systems.
I think now is probably a good time to talk a little bit about Iceberg and what you do. From my point of view, I remember that when, because, you know, Iceberg sponsored a couple of things last year, and I remember that every time Iceberg's name would come up among people I know, you know, they'd all sort of speak in hushed terms about, oh, they're cool. But why don't you tell us what it is you actually do and, you know, who's using your tech as well?
Yeah, so Iceberg builds network sensors that provide broad visibility into what's happening at that network level. And it's really built so that you can get in the weeds of that network metadata, so that you can go in, you can start hunting through that data, really looking for anomalous activity. We've got detections that are built in that'll flag on suspicious activity and known bad things. And most importantly, we have forensic capabilities built in that you can get into very, very nitty-gritty detail on that network, so that you can really recreate step-by-step what an attacker has done on your network or in your environment.
Okay, because I've heard you speak, you know, I've previously spoken to people from Iceberg, and it's very much been couched in terms of forensics, but you're talking detection now as well. Is that the play?
Yeah, so we're evolving our technology to meet that larger market space so that we can really allow a lot of different types of incident responders, security analysts, organizations to get that benefit all around. So the network forensics is a core component, and the next evolution for that allows for that detection based on that deep dive capability.
Of course, there are a lot of vendors that make network sensors, right? And network-based stuff. Like, what is it, would you say, what is it that you're doing differently? Because Iceberg, I understand, has been very successful at raising money into what is a crowded market space. So why is that? What is your special sauce here?
Yeah, so it's really how we're approaching the engineering challenges here. So we are 100% SaaS play. So we really want to come in and provide the ability to get that metadata up into our environment and run some very hardcore analytics on that so that everyone benefits from what we're doing. So if we're finding something suspicious in one client environment, we're able to run that against all of our other clients' data so that we can really dig in and provide that best value for everybody. We've really solved that hard engineering problem on the network side. You know, when people try to go in and build their own thing or leverage other vendors, they really find that it just doesn't scale to the extent that they need it to. And they spend more time managing the appliances and the overall infrastructure versus actually going and doing what the product was intended to do, which is find evil in the environment. So Iceberg has done a very, very good job of solving those tough engineering problems to have a scalable SaaS play solution here that allows everybody to benefit from what we're finding in our clients' environments.
Now, in terms of deployment, I understand that it's actually pretty straightforward. You just take an appliance, plug it into a SPAN port, It strips metadata locally and then pushes that into your cloud. That's the nuts and bolts of how it works, right?
Exactly. So it's really built to have ease of deployment. So we've done deployments in less than 15 minutes using virtual sensors, which is great when we're trying to help our incident response partners respond to something immediately so they can get that visibility right off the bat.
That's something I didn't think of. So what, they might get called to an incident and just deploy it because they want to see live attacks actually on the network at that moment.
Exactly, right? So we're trying to solve that visibility problem. And visibility during incident response engagements are a huge problem. And this goes back to when you're just focusing on the endpoint, you're really putting yourself at risk of missing quite a bit of information on what's going on. So leveraging incident response partners, we provide that technology and really get them in the driver's seat where they can take full control over an investigation and play back and forth between the endpoint technology and the network technology. And it makes them look like rock stars in front of the clients. The clients get ultimate value because now all of a sudden they have an insurance policy. You know, they don't have to worry about if they don't have full deployment on the endpoint side, which is something that is a huge issue where you might only get 80, 85% coverage on the endpoint. But if you have that network coverage there, now all of a sudden you're filling in those gaps. You can identify more easily what systems don't have that endpoint technology on it. You can get that additional cover. And that's something that's
huge. It's the unmanaged boxes that get you into trouble, right? So, and that's exactly. one area where network kind of shines.
Yeah, so I had one of my favorite investigations that I did was for a financial services company, and specifically the attackers were targeting ATM cards so that they were actually going in, they were increasing the balances on the accounts, and then they would draw the money down throughout the world. So this is something where the company lost close to $20 million overnight as a result of this. So during that investigation, what ended up happening was we did a full investigation. We had both the endpoint technology as well as the network technology. Now we did our investigation, we scoped everything out, and about 2 weeks after we did our containment and remediation plan, the attacker came right back in. And just as you had pointed out before, the unmanaged devices, it also applies to the network as well. And this is where you need to understand what your network is. You need to understand where everything lies, because what ended up happening was there was an office building that nobody realized was still on the books. It still had power, it still had internet connectivity, and there was a random desktop that was plugged in online and reaching out to the internet. And just by happenstance, the attacker installed one of his backdoors on that box. And from there, the attacker was able to come right back in because none of their security detections were in place because nobody knew this thing existed in the first place. And the attacker was able to come right back in and really start the attack right where he left off. So this is why visibility really matters. And for something like that, you know, if the organization had a better understanding of what their network layout looked like, we could have had that coverage on that network side. And regardless of whether the hosts were there or not, at least we would have been able to see that the attacker was using a backup backdoor to get back into the environment after that containment strategy went into effect.
We love a good war story, Jason, so thank you for sharing. It's interesting, right? Because it's not often that you see a network, you know, detection and security company being founded very much from the point of view of incident responders. I mean, you know, who better is what I've always said. But the history of your company, you very much started off dealing with large companies that actually had, you know, threat teams, right? Like threat hunt teams. That's the origin of the company, is it not?
That's correct. And it was really tailored to be that hunting type of device. And it was purpose-built by responders for responders. So it's really tailored towards that hunting device, which also tailors in nicely to the incident response side, where you can dig into that network forensic component of it. Really, the next evolution is that detection so that you have a full-scale solution here from start to finish to be able to identify the different anomalies that are going on in the environment through your threat hunting program, but also have these automated detections that when you're looking for something, you're looking for that back door or you're looking for that specific SSL certificate, that all of a sudden you get that visibility, you get that instant alert, and now you can jump into incident response mode right away and pivot into that investigation.
So how long has this sort of pivot to IDS, you know, when did this pivot towards being more of a sort of cloud-based IDS? When did that happen?
Well, it's, I wouldn't call it a traditional IDS, right? This is something where we're really looking at curated intelligence for our detections. The thing that I see people struggle with the most is alert fatigue. And this was a common occurrence in really every investigation that I've dealt with as well. Because when you have such loud noise in your environment and you're getting struck with, you know, hundreds or thousands of alerts every day, it's very, very easy to ignore them or just completely lose them. So the approach that we take is to have a dedicated team that's going through curating these detection technologies and providing you the highest fidelity detections possible. And this is extra important.
So this is less about getting an alert about some funny ICMP traffic that's coming from an obscure router that's hitting you for no particular reason, and more about saying, holy shit, you've got a real problem right here.
That's exactly right. You know, if you're getting an alert, then you really need to pay attention to this and you need to follow up. And that follow-up is just as important as anything else. You know, I'll give you another story here. So I did one of the larger healthcare breaches earlier, about probably 4 or 5 years ago. And during that investigation, what was identified was that there were several alerts that tipped off, not even late in the attack, but really early. You know, the initial phishing email that came in that resulted in the entire compromise, there was an alert on the back door that was communicating outbound. Now, coincidentally, what happened was it had blocked one IP address that this back door was reaching out to. But naturally, the attackers foresaw something like this happen, and they had a backup IP address inside of that back door. So now, all of a sudden, what happens is you have an analyst that goes in, sees an alert that was blocked for a back door that should have been flagged as something very bad, and just closes the ticket out thinking that, well, the back door didn't communicate out because we had a firewall that blocked the communication. Now, if there was a proper follow-up there, looking at on the network side, what other suspicious traffic is coming from this system? And on the host side, what caused that initial reach out in the first place? You know, what was the file? What was the back door? What would have been identified was that the attacker was able to get on that system, and within a few hours of that back door dropping, was dropping additional back doors and using that system to pivot. So this is where having really smart detections that are going to alert you not only to the severity of the alert, but also the context behind it on who's this alert associated with. You know, is this just a commodity group that isn't too bad, but something that you should follow up on? Or is this some sort of APT group or financial threat group that is going to specifically target you? So that context is really what allows our technology to take that to the next level and provide people a mechanism to respond intelligently to all the threats that their environment are facing.
I got to say, though, I'm surprised that someone would close out that ticket just because the, you know, command and control was blocked or the exfil channel was blocked. I mean, if there's still live code executing on one of the workstations, why the hell would you close that out just because, you know, you've blocked it at the network? That's insane.
It's very insane, but it's such a common occurrence. You know, this comes back to some talent shortages. It comes back to organizations just not having the time as well to really dig into these types of alerts. Because if you're dealing with hundreds of alerts a day and you have metrics that are designed to show how many tickets am I closing each day, it really incentivizes the wrong things.
People are actually putting like KPI, like, hang on, you've got to close X number of tickets a day? That's a thing?
Unfortunately, it is a thing.
That's crazy. That is actually crazy.
It's absolutely crazy. Yeah. And that's one of the major problems is, you know, as these security operations centers mature, sometimes they get led down that wrong path. There are many, many conversations on, you know, what are our useful metrics that are definitely beyond this. But, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to making sure that there is context within those alerts so that if something like that happens, you're raising it to the appropriate parties, you're getting that intelligence inside of that alert so that you can respond accordingly.
Jason, I want you to walk us through some examples of stuff that you've actually caught wearing your iceberg hat, because we've heard a little bit about incidents you've investigated in your prior career at Mandiant. But, you know, what's some stuff you've been able to do with iceberg that perhaps, you know, another technological approach wouldn't have caught? Can you help us out there? Just I'm trying to zero in on what might be different about Iceberg, because that's what I like to do in these soapbox things, is find out what makes you different.
Yeah, so we have some recent investigative support that we were assisting one of our partners on, and it was with an APT group. Now, this APT group had been entrenched in an organization for quite some time and was just siphoning off data routinely. And what would end up happening is that on a regular cadence, they would come back into the environment, they would check up on things, see that their back doors were still functional, that everything was okay, and then they would go in and start looking to see if there was any new data that was available. Now, the problem was that they were switching up their infrastructure once a month as well. So leveraging the Iceberg technology, we had identified the pattern of their infrastructure, and we created customized detections based on a number of different things, from how they were generating their infrastructure, some of the certificates that they were using for their encrypted traffic, and things of that nature.
So they were repeating certain information in certificate fields? Because that's pretty lazy attacking there, guys.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, right? You know, attackers are not the most ambitious people in the world, though they can be. But a lot of times they're going to go for the minimum amount of effort that they need to. And a lot of times the infrastructure changes cost money. So it's easier for them to just kind of reshare things. And it's an easy detection point for the network side, because we can track those types of changes. So leveraging those techniques, we were able to spot them as they were coming back in on that regular cadence with new infrastructure, and we would point the endpoint team in the right direction and say, these are the different systems that we see that they're communicating out to. Now let's get some investigation going on to those systems and see what else might have been happening at that same time. Now, the best part about this, and one of my favorite things about our technology, is that we are getting east to west traffic. So not only can we see backdoor communication going in and out, what the attacker might be downloading to the systems, but now we're also tracking lateral movement. So this is a huge advantage for incident responders and defenders, because now all of a sudden you can start seeing, where are we seeing the attacker log in after they get in through that back door? What types of files are they transferring around? That type of visibility on the network is really what takes your security to that next level, because you go from having to look at every single system in the environment that the attacker touched, do forensics on that system or triage that through live response analysis, and trying to interpret what happened through forensic artifacts, to now on the network side, using the Iceberg technology, you get a play-by-play on what the attacker was doing. You know, it's essentially reading their journal on, you know, what they did. You know, dear diary, today I attacked this company and I infected these three systems and transferred these files. That visibility is what allows you to see that type of activity.
But hang on, if they're pivoting off a popped workstation to another workstation and funneling everything through the original workstation, I mean, are you going to see that if you're just deployed at the gateway?
So we don't just deploy at the gateway. So we're trying to get onto that core switch so that we can see all of that core traffic as well. And that's really what visibility comes down to. It's maximizing the way that you can look into your environment to give you that data sets, and leveraging technology to filter out that noise and really get to what matters the most. So it's going in, understanding what that infrastructure looks like, figuring out what you need to get that maximum visibility, because that's ultimately what's going to drive your success in detecting and investigating and ultimately trying to stop attacks from happening in your environment.
Now, it's interesting when you talk about, you know, when you do talk about the sort of unique advantage, I guess, you know, everyone wants to talk about their unique selling proposition. And with Iceberg, it seems to be that, hey, we've got some really smart people who are sitting on the receiving end of this metadata. They're going through, they're finding actual attacks, creating, you know, flexible detections, and then rolling that out to customers. This seems to be a pitch that is getting a lot more traction with the EDR vendors as well, where it's not so much just about the product. It's them saying, well, you might not have a threat hunt team, but we do. And the more customers we have, the more threats we see and the more badness we can find. This seems to be an industry-wide trend, doesn't it? But I guess the difference is this is much easier to apply to EDR than traditional network detection stuff. The key difference for Iceberg being that because you're only grabbing the metadata, it's light enough to do in the cloud at scale. How did I do?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, what I'm seeing across the industry right now is that the more mature organizations, the ones that have invested in the basics, right? You know, they've got some basic network stuff. They have some basic EDR, and they're really looking to take it to the next level. It's evolving from a reactive detection mode to a proactive detection mode. And that's really what comes down to the threat hunting. And we shouldn't forget about the reactive, right? You know, it's just like antivirus. It's one of those things that you have to have. It's going to treat you well. You know, some people might disagree with it. They might question its value over time. But at the end of the day, it's still going to capture and protect against a lot of the commodity things that are out there.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you think AV is useless, then, you know, uninstall it for a week and see how you go, right? That's what I always
exactly.
say.
Exactly.
You're going to have a bad time.
Exactly. So for the organizations that are really looking to go from that reactive detection to the proactive detection, threat hunting is that next step. And the one thing I would stress first is to make sure that you have that reactive detection down pat. You know, this isn't something where you just jump into it and hope for the best. It's something that it does take some additional funding through either resources in terms of employees, either full-time employees or employee times. There might be some additional technologies that you're going to have to invest into really get the most benefit out of this. But the idea is that with proactive detection, which we call threat hunting, it really allows a little bit more creativity for the defenders, and it gets outside of that pure signature approach to security. So you're
but
really
isn't the,
looking
isn't
for,
the idea here, and isn't part of the pitch that you're kind of doing the threat hunting on behalf of your clients? I mean, maybe not at a really detailed granular level for everyone, but from that aggregate point of view, you've got analysts doing this stuff so that the client, maybe clients who don't have threat hunt teams are actually going to benefit as well. Isn't that the idea?
Yeah. So what we're doing is we're focusing on attacker methodologies, right? So when you're building out a threat hunting program and you're moving past that signature only approach, you're looking at how attackers are operating in the environment. How are they getting into the environment? How are they moving around? How are they stealing data? So what we are doing is developing these customized detections that really allow you to dig into that level of detail. And it's not something that's just only that Iceberg is doing, right? Our clients are looking at it and leveraging the technology to do the same thing that's specifically custom to their environment, right? So they could take a detection that we have created at Iceberg and really take that idea and customize it to their environment. So we talked a little bit about looking in at the user level data when you have that visibility into the internal environment. Well, you can take that and start looking around and seeing, well, if I see this account logging into these types of accounts and doing this type of activity, then we can start flagging on something like that. You know, really, the benefit of the Iceberg technology is how deep that you can go into that network metadata. And from there, you can really create customized detections that go into this threat hunting mindset where it's not just a signature for a backdoor that somebody saw 4 years ago and may not be really relevant anymore. You're really expanding out that capability into what are attackers doing in the environment, and how can I create these detections to identify them throughout the environment?
One criticism that is leveled at the InfoSec, at the current InfoSec industry at large, is that a lot of the solutions that receiving funding and being developed are only really applicable to the Fortune, maybe the top half of the Fortune 100, who actually can make use of this this sophisticated technology that is quite sort of labor intensive to drive. Is your target market that top, that top echelon, the high security environments, or is this something that you're trying to market to wider enterprise as more of a simple thing to deploy? Where are you trying to sell this stuff?
So we're really trying to target organizations that are ready for that leap, where they have that endpoint technology, they're getting that use case out of it, but they're really looking to expand that visibility and provide
that. So this is for CrowdStrike, Carbon Black style customers who are saying, okay, we've done an EDR project, we've got really good visibility on the endpoints, but we're missing this piece. Am I onto that or?
Well, it even goes beyond that. You know, it's really for anyone that is ready to take that to the next level. So even if you haven't invested in that EDR technology, network is still a great starting point because it really expands that visibility.
Well, you know, and it's a lot easier than doing a you know, enterprise-wide desktop agent install, right?
Exactly. And one of the things that we really strive for is that ease of deployment. So we have dedicated teams that will work with organizations to really understand what their network architecture looks like and walk them through that deployment process. And throughout that, we have coverage engineering to ensure that we're getting the visibility that we need. And it's not a one-time thing. You know, this is something where your organization is not static. You know, your environment is going to grow over time. You know, we do a lot with organizations that are pretty heavy in mergers and acquisitions. So, you know, when something like that pops up, we come in, we take a look at their new environment, and we do another coverage engineering run and see, are we getting all of that visibility that we need to? And that's before they even start thinking about the endpoint, because from that standpoint, you know, right away within, you know, either a matter of hours if it's a smaller environment or, you know, whatever it is, we're going to work with them, make sure that they get that visibility. And then once those sensors are online and reporting back, right away, you're getting that visibility into that entire environment.
You mentioned earlier virtual sensors. What did you mean by that? Because I'd imagine that just running a, you know, standard VM, probably not going to, I mean, is this some sort of network appliance virtual thingy, or are you just talking about like a standard Linux VM that you drop somewhere?
So we have some pre-built virtual machines that we are able to provide to our customers that if they have the appropriate hardware and space and all the other requirements, they can deploy that out there. Now, it's not going to work for every single environment, but for the environments that it does, that is what provides us that capacity where we can quickly deploy that out.
So it might not work for a telco, but it'll probably work for a bank sort of thing.
Exactly right. It really depends on what your environment is, what your throughput is, and how much hardware that you've got to support that virtual machine. And it's not going to work for everybody. And that's why we have the physical hardware that we would ship out and configure for you. So it's kind of a choose your own adventure. And we help guide you through that to make sure that you're getting that visibility as well as that coverage that you need.
Now, I'd imagine given that, you know, installing this on a sort of low throughput network, you know, like an office network is a case of dropping a VM. Do you actually offer, you know, easy customer trials for this sort of stuff? Because I'd imagine there's a few people listening who are like, okay, you know, this actually sounds pretty interesting. I'd like to have a look at it. Is that something people can do?
Yeah, so we try to remove those barriers to entry. So we're always open to providing POCs for clients so that they can take a look at what's going on. And there's a lot of value in just that stage alone where we can come in and do that coverage engineering. We take a look at the environment. And as part of all of those cycles, we always end up providing a network security posture report. So at the end of the day, you can start identifying where are some risk areas in my network that I need to start paying attention to. And it could be anything from outdated software and third-party applications and operating systems to you've got some insecure protocols that are reaching into the environment like Telnet. So that type of coverage engineering tied to the network security posture reports really provides value even during that first initial phase.
It's funny, right? Because I can think of two very high-profile breaches that were actually unveiled due to customers doing a POC. I'm talking specifically about the RSA breach, which was, you know, they only found that because NetWitness came in, dropped the box on their network, and it lit up like a Christmas tree. And they're like, oh, and this actually led to NetWitness being acquired by RSA. And in the case of OPM, it was Silence who, you know, they were doing a trial. And yeah, lit up like a Christmas tree. And they're like, oh, we're owned. Have you had any of those moments with Iceberg deploying it to an environment and going, holy God, man.
Yeah, it happens quite often. And it's something where, just like you said, it really does light up like a Christmas tree, especially when you don't have any similar type of technology or you really have been forgetting the network. You know, a lot of times we plug this in and we get it up and running. And then all of a sudden, you know, we can have just a handful of leads that we need to start tracking down. And in some cases, it has turned out to be either an active attacker or remnants of some legacy malware that may not be getting used anymore, but were indications of a prior breach.
And how do you spot legacy malware on the network? Is that like, you know, unsuccessful beaconing or whatever?
Exactly. So it might not be active in the sense the attacker is still leveraging it and actually coming into the environment through that backdoor.
Yeah, but it's still trying to fire off to port 443 on a domain that expired 2 years ago. That's probably not good, right?
Exactly. That's a little red alert there and causes us to pause and say, okay, there's something going on here.
So at the end of the day, Jason, I guess really what, you know, the case that you're trying to make is that the network really is not dead. It's an important piece and you shouldn't, you shouldn't fly blind when it comes to network stuff.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, you really need to focus on your security as a whole, right? It's not just about focusing in on endpoint or network. These things really tie together nicely. You know, it's something where you don't have to choose one or the other. And if anything, these technologies serve as insurance policies for the other, right? So if I have the endpoint technology out there, I want to make sure that if something goes wrong in that arena, I've got that insurance policy on the network side to give me that additional air cover where I'm never really feeling like I'm going to be left high and dry because I have these different technologies that are playing with each other and providing me that maximum field of visibility.
All right, Jason Rebholz, thank you very much for joining us on the show. I've got to say, I always find it really interesting to speak to someone with an incident response background who's gone into product because the ideas seem to be, just that little bit different. It's been a great chat and thanks again.
Thanks so much.
That was Jason Rebholz of Iceberg there. Big thanks to him for that. You can check out Iceberg at iceberg.io. That is iceberg.io, Iceberg without the E, without the second E. That's it for this edition of the Soapbox Podcast. I'll be back with the weekly show in a couple of days. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.